Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here Wednesday, April the 1st, 2026, April Fool's Day. How about that? 16 minutes past the hour, and hopefully April showers will bring May flowers as we are into the season of spring. Joining us here this hour, somebody I'm very glad to have with us in the studio, is the current president of the Marion Women's Club and Home, Valerie Wigton, who's going to explain to us the success of the big event that happened this past March the 7th, the big fundraiser that happened, gala, over at the Women's Club Home, and also other comings and goings at the Women's Club Home. I know a lot of great things going over there. I heard Mary Ellen Withrow donated a painting there, which is on display, which is great, as well as some events with purses that go on there that people have a lot of fun with. So it's a lot of fun, a lot of good things going on over at the Women's Club. Valerie, thanks for coming in this morning. Glad to have you here.
Thank you, Scott. And it's a real honor to be here and to share the story of the Marion Women's Club. You know, we have a long history. Our club was formed in 1895. And of all the information that I share with listeners and when I speak to other groups, I want them to understand that this is 131 years now of impacting our community, of giving back to our community, of volunteers who join together for common causes to preserve and protect not only the historic home and property, but to make an impact in our community. So thanks for having me.
Now, the Women's Club home is the Barlow home, and the Barlows were friends of the Hardings.
Yes, it's my understanding that they were friends. Mr. Barlow, Shock was his name, and his wife, Ida. Shock was employed at Huber Manufacturing. He was a leading executive there when Mr. Huber, the creator of the company, who started the company, when he passed away, it was Shock Barlow who took over the company, as Mr. Huber's son was not mature, old enough, whatever it was, to run the company. So he actually ran the company. And during this time, his wife, Ida, became very involved in what was actually a national movement of women having a voice. Of course, 1895, women did not have the vote. And across the country, book clubs began to be forming among women in various communities across the nation because they did a lot of reading. And actually, it was a group of women, like in many other communities, a group of women right here with Ida Barlow as one of the leaders, who said, we need to do more. We need to make an impact. How can we get the message out, maybe through our husbands, that we need to, for example, have a library in Marion? They were very instrumental in getting the Carnegie Library built, the first hospital right here in this building. They were instrumental in that. It's really amazing, the history that we have in our club. So they never had any children. They did have one child that died at childbirth. And so I think this was a way for Ida to really, have a voice and to encourage other women to be a part of it. So at one time, membership grew to over 1,000 members, if you can believe that. They had been meeting. Different groups had been meeting in church basements, in homes, in other areas, and they wanted to have a location where they could all meet at one time, or various groups could meet at one time. And so over the years, Ida and Shock decided to will their home to the Marion Women's Club, making it the forever home. And with that came the responsibility of the upkeep and the maintenance for that beautiful facility out on East Center Street. The big White House, as people tell me, with a big, the big black fence around it, is the Marion Women's Club and Home. So in 1945, when they passed, the home did become part of the Marion Women's Club.
Now, my understanding is the Barlows were very into entertaining, that there was a I don't know what you would call it, a dance hall, dance room,
as a part of the house. Yes.
Yeah.
Excuse me. The very top floor, the third floor, is a ballroom, and it is beautiful. Of course, the entire home has its original woodwork, because no one ever lived in the home other than the Barlows. And there is a ballroom there, and over the years it has been used for many different organizations and clubs. I know that one of the local art clubs would meet there. In fact, your friend, my friend, our friend, Mary Ellen Withrow, first came to the historic Barlow home as a child of 12 years old with her mother, and she took art lessons there. And that was her first introduction to the Marion Women's Club and the home itself. And so Mary Ellen has been a longtime friend of ours, I mean, ever since she was 12 years old. So we are very blessed with her friendship and her support and involvement. And so, yes, it is a beautiful floor. In fact, prior to each gala that we have, many of the instructors and the dancers will use that space to, you know, get the EBGBs out and make sure that they, are ready to entertain the guests. So it is a beautiful, beautiful part of the home.
And also to show the relationship between the Hardings and the Barlows, wasn't the piano that President Harding had in the White House stored at the Women's Club for many years?
Yes, it was. That is my understanding, yeah, that it was stored at the Women's Club for many years. Is no longer there.
Right, right.
Although the Marion Lecture Recital Club held many of its events there, and we still have a baby grand piano in the auditorium, as well as a, I believe it's called a square grand piano in the parlor or living room of the facility. Now, we don't have any data that proves that that was the Barlow's piano. However, it would have been very similar. It would have been very likely that they could have had a piano in the parlor. On the first floor, in addition to the parlor or the living room area, the home features a library with sliding wooden doors, pocket doors that open and close. And we know that Mr. Barlow smoked a pipe. We have pictures of him with a pipe in his hand. And as the story goes, and as research has shown, you know, following a lovely dinner, the men would retreat to the library and the women to the parlor for entertaining and piano music, etc.
You know, it's very interesting because prior to 1950, I think people have an interesting perception of what the Women's Club was. And I came across an article that was written in the Marion Star. It would have had to have been in the late 30s or the early 40s. And this is a name, a throwback for people, but Dorothy Fulltime, who was a very well-known television personality in Cleveland, she was on Johnny Carson as well. She became a national personality, but she had went to Germany prior to World War II as a reporter and came back and was giving speeches on what it was like. You know, she'd heard Hitler speak. She'd been to Germany. And one of the places she was invited to speak was the Marion Women's Club home. So there were big social issues. It wasn't just things that I think people think it might have been of that era.
Right. Oh, that is such a good point, Scott. Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that, which brings me to the a big success that we have had, been able to share. The carriage house on the property was transformed, transitioned, thanks to several State of Ohio grants, the Marion Community Foundation, and very generous donors, into our Women's History Resource Center. That center now houses all of our archives. The club, as I mentioned earlier, had over 1,000 members. They belong to 33 different clubs under the umbrella of the Marion County Federation of Women's Clubs. And each one of those clubs kept beautiful, diligent, complete records. And we have many, many articles from the Marion Star that are collected. And we now have all of those in have been scanned into our electronic archives. The thing about that, though, is in that era, the notes were taken in longhand. And so all of those minutes and recordings and newspaper clippings, everything, the handwritten notes at least, have to be interpreted. And finding people to say, you know, take 4 or 5 pages of notes in longhand and interpret that into what these clubs were doing is a process. So we are in the process of that. But yes, we have many, many articles in the Marion Star, and we actually, you know, make those archives available by appointment to the general community to see. We even had recently a professor from Case Western University who was doing some research on the Native Americans in Northeast Ohio and came across the name of a woman and wanted, from this area, wanted to see if we had any information. And so our archivist, Kylie Cunningham, who's a trained archivist, researched that for the professor to get that information. So yes, there are so many stories of impacting our community. I mentioned a few. You had mentioned about the woman who had been a reporter, gone to Germany. So, you know, Marion, with its many, many railroad, you know, being a railroad center, we have found in our archives that many women in Marion that belong to the Women's Club, that part of their impact that they wanted to do was to support our soldiers before they left to go overseas. And we know that they provided many different things that the soldiers were very much appreciative of. And so that, I mean, that's just one small little piece of history that we are very proud of. And, you know, as we move into, 2026, 27 and beyond, we want to continue that impact in our community. So there are many, many different ways that we've done that.
A lot of groups had or have had this issue, and certainly the Women's Club did. If people remember going to events maybe in the late 90s, early 2000s, I know the ice cream socials, which were a big event for the Women's Club, I think that was the last of sort of the original group of women that were left. They were still doing that into the maybe 2010, 2011. But then things kind of took a little bit of a downturn. What do you think that was attributed to before this resurgence?
Well, I do believe that when women entered the workforce, of course, that was well before 2000, but when women entered the workforce, we know that our membership continued to decline year after year after year. And so with women in the workforce, that meant a lot less time to devote to outside interests, outside volunteer work. I do believe that, with families and children being involved in sports, in drama, in music, and a lot of other areas, that, you know, the time that, or the number of people available to do that kind of work kind of dwindled. And you are exactly right that we did have some very lean years. And thankfully, several women, past presidents, and other officers, such as Lynette Davis and Cheryl Herr and Nancy Hafer, those ladies really found out that apparently the club was at risk of potentially being placed on the market. And I know that Lynette Davis, here in longtime member of our community, heard about this. She had been, where she is an artist, she had been doing classes up on the third floor, and she said, we cannot let this happen. She reached out to Cheryl Herr, who is a lover of antiques and history and women's history. And, you know, that is where the ball got rolling again. And now I think we have found our niche with membership. Although our membership is from women aged, you know, in their mid-20s to, you know, Mary Ellen, who is 95. I love you, Mary Ellen.
I didn't say that, Mary Ellen, but okay.
Bless her heart. Yeah. So we do have a wide range of women who are members, and our membership now has grown from, you know, in the, like you said, the late 90s, early 2000s, from a handful of women. We are now back up to nearly 100 members. Mm. And as I mentioned, our niche, I believe, at least, you know, speaking from experience myself, after I retired a few years early from my career, I wanted to still give back to the community. And I had been asked to actually participate in the very first gala in 2019. And from that moment on, I was offered a membership, and I found that it was an organization where I felt I could contribute and I could give back. And, you know, hats off to all of our members for having the heart to give back to our community, to try to make it a better place, to have an impact. You know, you mentioned the Handbags for Hope that we do every year. We have done that for 3 years now, where members gather very gently used or new purses, fill those with all kinds of items that are specific needs of clients of Turning Point and the homeless shelter. And last year we had over 300 bags that were donated, filled to the brim. We do that in December of each year. Ohio Health has taken on that project, the nursing team there. This year they had every unit in the hospital who wanted to participate. So, you know, there's a lot of good in our people, in our members, and we're so appreciative of that. And so we now are trying to, every year we adopt an organization, and service and giving back to our community now is really heart and central to our organization, as well as the upkeep and maintenance of the historic home, built in 1903.
I know. Been there a while.
It has. Yeah. It has. So,
you know what's interesting to me, and you said the first event was what year? The
club was formed? Oh, 2019.
I remember, and there's an interview somewhere in our archives, the first year this was going to happen, because the club, as you said, had seen a decline in that era, but wanted to save it, didn't want it to go in any trouble. And I remember, and I know Linda, Mary Ellen's daughter, was on at that time, and she brought somebody with her, and I'd have to go back and check who it was, but it was prior saying, we're going to try this, and we're going to see how this goes. And boy, it went very, very well.
Yes, it did. And I must mention, Scott, the year that our first year was the year that when I was asked to participate, I was declared the winner. Of course, the winner is the person who raises the most money, which really the true winner is the Marion Women's Club and home. But that experience, and each year, what we have found are that the dancers and the instructors who are always nervous. The dancers are always nervous. I was very, very nervous. But you get to meet other members of our community that maybe your circle did not include. And that just keeps growing and growing and growing. And by having different dancers every year, we are exposing a whole new community to the Women's Club, to the home, to the facility, to the auditorium, so that, you know, more people are aware. Yes, you can rent the auditorium. Yes, the club is thriving. Yes, we have a beautiful facility and we are continuing to impact, you know, the community. Yes, we have now a formal archive process where you can request information from 1897, if you would like, and we can help you with that. So it is a great opportunity to share our mission, our vision, our hopes for the future, as well as our very important history.
I know a lot of planning goes into something like this. When does the planning start for this event, and how does everything come together? How are people chosen? How do we get to the final night of March the 7th?
Okay. Great that you asked. We just had our wrap-up meeting for this year's gala yesterday, and I looked in my notes, and our first meeting for this year's gala was in July of 2025. So we'll have just a few months off. I'm like, oh my goodness, we have April, May, and June to kind of breathe again. But there is a committee that is formed, and those are members. Some are board members, some are not board members, some are new members. And they begin meeting, and at that time we brainstorm. We brainstorm on our theme, and we also brainstorm on who might be our quote-unquote celebrity dancers. Now, these are people who may or may not have the status of celebrity in some people's minds. Okay, what we hope to do is to have a broad range of individuals who we know would be willing to help support the Marion Women's Club, because it is our one and only fundraiser. That is what we have to constantly remember, is that this is a fundraiser. We put fun in capital letters, fundraiser, because it is a very, very fun night. So our committee, which is probably 10 or 12 members, brainstorms. We have a list. Sometimes that list is relatively short. This year we have probably 20 individuals already identified who have either said, you know, I really love this event, I would love to help you and participate. And then we have other people that we say, boy, wouldn't it be great if we could ask him. For example, we would love to have Andrew Swartz from Andrew's Pastries on. We have asked him for 3 or 4 years, and he just has so much going on. He's so busy. He's like, Valerie, I would love to help you, but how about if I give you some cookies for your event? And so that has been great. But we just whittled down that list for men and women in our community. Some may be visible to a certain population of the community. You know, others may be unknown. I mean, this year there were several. I'm like, I didn't know any of these people. And that's just because, you know, everybody's circle is different.
Can't know everybody.
Right. That's right, Scott. So that is really how it works. Nobody comes and says, you know, I want to be a part of this. That's really never happened. It's us reaching out to those individuals. Maybe they are individuals who we know are visible. Maybe it's individuals who we know are philanthropic and are supporters of the club. Maybe it's individuals who have a happy-go-lucky attitude. One year we had Tiffany Starcher. Tiffany is the assistant manager at Carol's Jewelers. Curly-haired, bundle of energy, and she just took this role and contacted all of her friends, clients, and she said, Valerie, I had so much fun doing this. It was the most fun type of thing that I've done in a long, long time. And she ended up being declared the overall champion, raising the most money for the club. So that's kind of the process, Scott, that we use. And there have been years where we have, people have turned us down. You know, I'm too busy. I'm going to be on vacation. I'm just not ready to do something like that. I have bad knees. I'm having a hip replacement. So, you know, and we have all ages. We have all ages of dancers, and we'd like to do that too. Bless their hearts, our instructors are all people from the community who have who are what I would call professional dance instructors who have a business or are part of a business. They all volunteer their time to work with the dancers and meet in their off hours and practice their dance because, they do very different types of dances, everything from the Latin, salsa, jitterbug, the jive, tap, jazz, hip-hop. So they are tasked with about a 3-minute portion of a song to perform that evening. And also our guests that evening have the ability to support the dancer that they feel is best in their mind. Now, a couple of years ago, Scott, we added two performance awards. And as you know, your colleague, Linda Sims Pickett, who was one of the dancers, and she's a member of ours, she won that. She won the Ladies Performance Award. So we have a Guys Performance Award and a Ladies Performance Award. And basically what that is, you know, we have our judges who are professionals in the dance community here in Marion. They actually judge, you know, based on how they performed. You know, yep, this person, you know, they score a 9.9 or whatever. And so it has been good to add those two performance awards. And I remember talking with Linda, and she was so nervous. And I said, Linda, I really think you can do this. You can do this. And so she really enjoyed it, and she had a great time.
Well, it was great because I attended in 24. That was the year Linda won the Female Performance Award. It was great to see that, first of all, somebody who's been here with us for 12 years. That was great. That was also one thing that struck me that night was, not to say who it was, but as you say, everybody's somewhat nervous. And there was somebody who very well known in this town, who was one of the dancers that night, who I could not believe how nervous they were going in there to do that. But I guess if it were me, I'd be nervous too.
Yes.
And because they're not a dancer, that's right. And they're used to being up in front of people, but not in that way, how nervous they were. But also, that was the night, I believe, George Kasotis' last public dance.
Yes.
So it was a big night.
It was a big night, and that was another thing that we added that year, to have a special celebrity honoree. And George, God rest his soul, always loved to dance. And so he danced with Suzanne Harris, very, very good friend. And Suzanne has been a friend of our gala every year, providing us with instructors, or she herself has done that. And yes, it was. That was a lovely, lovely dance that they performed. And there were even tears in people's eyes that night. And he slowly shuffled his way around the dance floor, but it was a really a beautiful evening.
Well, I think even the symbolism of that in it, I mean, I don't think George was in his early 90s, obviously, so you never know when you get to that point, but that he was able to do that. And I think the symbolism of Suzanne being Martha Dowse's daughter, because for years when we were doing events, stage shows, Martha and George would always dance because people just loved to see them dance, and they were both taught by Marilyn Meskey.
Yes.
Similar in age.
Yes.
Miss America.
Yes. Right.
So it was a very touching moment for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So we were happy to do that, and we try to make the gala to have some kind of different special segment each year. We had Ryan Ratliff 2 years ago, who performed his Dancing Through the Decades medley. It was wonderful. Of course, you know, Ryan's been very involved in the palace and performance, and so that was wonderful. And I guess it just goes to show how many people are willing to help another organization in our community. And, you know, we're a nonprofit. We're certified by the IRS as a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We are an all-volunteer organization with a big responsibility. I mean, if we think about what it takes to take care of our own homes, and yet all of our members are willing to say, I want to help take care of this historic home in Marion, a big part of the history in our community. So, you know, I love to hear people at the gala tell me, you know, this home has a lot of history. And I mean, the trees alone on the outside, our beautiful white oak trees are some of the original trees that were part of the property. And the property was built in an orchard. And so we still have some of those trees remaining. But yes, the history of what took place there, and having those archives from 1895 that continue through today is a critical element of our organization too. And now that we have the Carriage House, which is termed the Women's History Resource Center, it really is a way for us to position ourselves for the future. You know, yes, we're looking toward the past, but we are also preserving the future for future generations. This week, we have Ohio State Marion students that we have had a partnership with Ohio State Marion for 4 or 5 years, thanks to board member Dr. Margaret Sumner, a history professor there. She's also a board member. She brings her students to the historic home, now into the resource center, and they are delving into our archives to find stories of interest to them. Not only that, but then what they will do is we have, again, another partnership with Ohio State Marion, actual New York City playwrights come from New York City and work with these students, and they will help them develop their research into a play that is relevant to today or to the time period. So that is coming up. That is on April the 10th, a Friday evening. And please look at our Facebook page for more information on that. It is fun. These plays are enacted by community members. And it was hard for me to kind of understand how this all works, but I hope I explained it enough. They take those archives, and they sometimes the play will take place, for example, during the time of the suffragists, women earning the right to vote. I was one of the actors that year, and boy, was it fun. Last year there was a topic of women's rights and women being harassed in the workplace. So really kudos to Ohio State Marion, Dr. Sumner, and all of these community members who participate and help us with this project by taking those archives and making them relevant to today.
You know, it's interesting, Valerie, and I want to get to the results of this year's event. But, you know, last year, I remember when the dancers were announced for this year's event, and I'm sure this has probably happened in the past, and not to mention any names here, but are you surprised with this being a charity event, that fundraiser, that, you know, some people love some people dislike some people think people should be doing things, some people think they shouldn't. Are you surprised that there's any type of backlash in any way when they say, oh, maybe that person shouldn't be doing that?
You know, I have not been aware of that, and everybody has an opinion on everything. And we are just very, very grateful for those who do say yes to the dance. It is a commitment of many, many hours, and there are many deserving organizations that they could be devoting their time and attention to. And like I said, everybody is entitled to his or her opinion, but I think once people understand the background, the reason why we are putting this event together and identifying individuals who are willing to support us, and really understanding our mission of empowering women, enriching the community, preserving and protecting the historic property, as well as celebrating our rich legacy, I think that hopefully they will have a better understanding of our efforts.
Yep. This year's event, how did it go?
We made history once again. Altogether, we raised over $98,399. We are just short of raising $100,000. Last year, we were at, I believe, $94,000. My goal for this year as president was $80,000. That is a lot of money, yes, indeed. But I said, you know, times are different. You know, times are tough and challenging. And so to have our community come together and donate. Maybe, those donations range from $25 up to $10,000. So it's a whole range, a whole group of people, with that room packed with 225 guests and sell out for the seventh straight year. People really open their hearts, and we try to make the event as mission related as possible. And so those were the results. Now, of that amount, we raised over $15,000 at our Fund a Need auction. And what that is, so the gala this year, proceeds were identified to help us build a new back porch on the home, as well as to address uneven steps that lead to the auditorium. We've had a couple of falls, no serious injuries, but we know that those steps are not ADA compliant, and we know that the back porch is really in need of major repair. Because the historic home is on the National Register of Historic Places, it can't just be any old porch. It has to follow the actual historical guidelines, and we do happen to have, bless their hearts, the Barlows kept the blueprints of their property. And so we have the original blueprints that show what that back porch should look like. And so the gala, major funds of the gala were to build that new back porch, which early estimates were at $60,000, and it's probably going to be a lot more than that. But the auction, the Fund a Need auction, was designated to pave the path. So anyone who has been at the Women's Club, the parking, we have just under 30 paved parking spots. We have many, many rentals where there are there is more space that is needed. We are so fortunate that Ag Credit, the building right next to the Women's Club there on East Center, the Ag Credit building has allowed us to provide our renters and members and guests after hours with use of their parking lot. And so to get people from their parking lot to the Women's Club auditorium used to just be in grass or mud or snow or walking on the street behind and up along True Avenue, not very safe and not very practical. So a couple of years ago, we put a product down on the ground so that at least we would have some kind of a stone product. So there would be some kind of pathway. And this year we said we would like to have a sidewalk, a paved concrete sidewalk with lighting that leads from the Ag Credit Building to the Women's Club. And so that is what those funds will be raised and used for.
What do you foresee in the future for the Women's Club home?
I foresee that our archives are used regularly by community members and by researchers, by people who are interested in genealogy, by students, continuing to have students involved, because history is important. That's how we learn for the future. To see, and you know, it's a source of pride, I believe, to see how women work together, have worked together for 130 years plus to make our community a better place, gives us incentive today to continue to do things, to continue to serve our community. We hope to have the gala for at least 10 years, maybe longer. We know that we will need to have some kind of big fundraiser to keep that property up to code, up to speed. Now, we do have rentals, but rentals of the auditorium basically are help us cover our operating costs, heat, insurance, mowing, things that, you know, we would do in our own home. And, you know, my hope is that we are creating now a new generation of leaders, either through our own board, board of directors, and our membership, as well as reaching out into the community. We had our first major group of students, eighth grade students, who came, Marion City School students, 100 of them came for a visit last year, and they loved it. They loved it. We exposed them to what life would have been like when the Barlows were living there. And believe it or not, they were so engaged. They had all of these questions. Wow, I didn't know that. I mean, you know, think about women being identified by through their husband. I know Mary Ellen has spoken of that, that was very frustrating to her, that the Marion Star originally, when she was first getting into politics, identified her as Mrs. Norman Withrow. And she called them up and said, "My name is Mary Ellen Withrow." Well, we can't put that. We can't identify you that way. But, you know, we have our newspaper articles where women were identified through their husband only. And I am not trying to bash husbands or men in any way, but women have that right to have their own identity. And so I know that's kind of up in the air, pie in the sky, but I think we are, and we have been, setting the standard, making role models, being role models for future generations of women in our community.
You know, it's interesting. I think about a group that's been around this long, and you know, the mission statements over the years are what people thought should happen with women, I'm sure have changed over time. But here we are in 2026, and, you know, just as we look at the world, we've never had a female president. We've never had a female mayor of Marion. We've never had a female governor, although, who knows, we'll see what happens in the fall. You know, is it still more difficult? You talked about Mary Ellen's situation there. Do you think it's still more difficult for women in general, in all walks of life, when they're competing with men?
Well, I think that we as a nation have to really understand the role of women and families and, you know, the responsibility of raising children has traditionally been on, you know, women. With women entering the workforce, I think that that transition hasn't fully happened. And I know there are women who have said, not going to have children, it's too expensive, and I don't have time. So when you talk about the future, we want to make sure we have future leaders and future female leaders. I think that women have come a long, long way, and we still have a ways to go. I know I experienced some personal, wasn't hired for a job here in Marion because I had just had a baby. Now, that's been 35, 36 years ago. But, and I didn't know what to do. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess so. So I do believe, you know, we continue to show people that women can have as much knowledge and power and ability as a man. But I do think the whole idea of families and how we raise children and whose responsibility is it, you know, we're still, I think, working through that, Scott. But I'm confident that we are on the right path.
You know, it's just fascinating to watch sometimes because there are just situations that sometimes superficial are odd when it's a man versus a woman. Dress is always one. Mary Ellen and I talk about that a lot. She says when she was in office and to this day has to be a lot more cognizant of how her hair looks and how she's dressed than a man would. And attitude is also that. You know, if a man is assertive, he's considered to be, you know, powerful and in charge. If a woman is assertive, they use other words.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. Yes, I know that women who are confident sometimes are seen by other women as bossy, thinking as a know-it-all. And so you're right. I think that as long as women are cognizant of those issues, that, you know, hopefully people, the general population, will see if we're looking at, you know, future leaders, government leaders, we need to look at what they stand for, you know, versus, well, I'm going to vote for a woman because she's a woman. I did hear some of that. You know, I'm going to vote for a woman because she's a woman. Well, I think I think we as a nation need to think, I'm going to vote for the person whose values and what they believe in, it, you know, is what I believe should be best for our community, for our country. And as I'm sure you would agree with me, Scott, is our community, our state, our nation, our country needs good leaders. And that is one thing that I guess when we were raising our children, that I never talked to them about being a good leader, but hopefully we set the example by being involved in the community, by giving back to the community. And now I see our daughter, I've seen her, she has young children, and now she is, she's put together a mom's group. She's put together a parent group for the parent of the children. And she's even come to me and said, Mom, why I can't get these people to do anything? And I'm like, yes, Stephanie, we have to, you know, make sure that we are communicating with them and understanding why we're doing this. And it is a challenge to be a leader and to be a good leader. I think that that's one thing that I know in my transition now that I'll be concluding my fourth year as president of the Marion Women's Club, that I'm very cognizant of building leaders, of encouraging people to take on a leadership role. It is not easy. You have to be willing to take a lot of flack. You have to be willing to listen to all sides. So yeah, there's a lot involved a lot involved in that. And yes, I that's a very good point that Mary Ellen makes.
It's a very deep subject. It is a very deep subject. If people want to join the Women's Club or get more information, how do they do it?
The easiest way is to go to our website, MarionWomen'sClub.org. MarionWomen'sClub.org. We have a new website, a beautiful website, and we're very proud of it. And there is a membership tab there, and you can even pay dues online. Our dues are $75 a year. And I would encourage your listeners to find out more about us. There's all kinds of information about our club, our history, what we're doing, what our goals are, what we've done in the past. Lots of information there. And, you know, we are a network of women who support each other. And we're very, very, very proud of where we are today.
Final question today. When somebody hears the name Women's Club or joining the Women's Club home, what's the biggest misconception they have?
Well, I think it would go a little bit beyond that. And what we hear is what do they do in that house? What's that house all about? And so we are really working hard every day to break down the misconception that it is, quote unquote, an old lady's home.
Still there.
It's still there among some people. I remember talking to a contractor when we put in a new sump pump last year to take care of water in the basement. You know, what actually goes on in there? And so hopefully we are going to be putting up a new sign sometime in the front of the building so that people know it is a historic home and that we do have auditorium rentals there. So that to me is something that we're trying to break that misconception. We have a new logo that, you know, connects our club to the home. You know, we are a club of women. And that is sometimes misleading, is that we have a club, we also have the home, and the club is responsible for the historic home, but we also have an organization that is busy putting on programs, doing service projects, empowering women. So, you know, it's a constant battle, but we're working on it.
Working on it is a pretty good thing. Valerie Wigdon's been the guest this morning with the Marion Women's Club and home, and we are glad she was able to join us. Thank you for the conversation this morning.
Thank you, Scott. Yeah. It was a pleasure.
It's always fun, and hey, nearly $100,000 isn't bad. Can't go wrong there.
We're very blessed.
For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Burr. Ida Laureen Bird, age 76, passed away on March 26th. Visitation on Friday, April 3rd at the Boyd Funeral Home, 122 West Columbia Street, from 5 to 7 p.m. Graveside service on Saturday, April 4th at Claiborne Cemetery, 26763 Ohio Route 37 in Richwood. You may leave an online condolence at BoydFuneralMarion.com for Ida Laureen Bird. Albert Sloan, age 90, of LaRue, passed away on March 26th. He is survived by children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. The family will receive friends on Wednesday.